sweet cherry wine, so very fine. We'll drink it right down, pass it all around, so stimulating, so intoxicating, sweet cherry wine.
You know, I had a glass or two of sweet cherry wine this summer following a trip to Door County wineries. But I don't drink wine very often, and I don't know all that much about wine, so I'm looking forward to learning more about wine this hour from our guest and from you. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will find out how to enjoy wine, the differences between different kinds of wine, how to order wine in a restaurant, how to pick out a good bottle of wine for a gift or for a certain nice meal, and we'll welcome your wine-related questions and recommendations at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Melanie Wagner. She's a certified sommelier as well as a wine writer, teacher, and speaker, and she is the author of Hello Wine, the most essential things you need to know about wine. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thank you.
Well, thanks for being with us. So why did you write the book? Who's it for?
It's for myself a long time ago, and it's for lots of people who have been drinking wine for a while but still feel a little awkward with it. And I hope that it makes people a lot more comfortable with wine. I hope that it empowers them and lets them just enjoy it.
No, you wrote it for me, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I do. I'll have a glass here or there. And I do, like I mentioned, we did this tour of some Door County wineries this summer. And most of those, a lot of those wines are fruity wines and sweet wines. But there are so many different kinds of wines. How many different kinds of wines are there?
I don't have an exact count. I mean, in Italy alone, there are over 2,000 indigenous grape varietals. So there's a lot to know. There's a lot to learn. Fortunately, many of those don't make it to creating fine wine. So there's not that many in the grocery store, thank goodness. But Hello Wine will definitely help people navigate their way through.
So how did you get interested in wine?
I didn't grow up in a wine drinking family. I went to San Francisco on a break during college one year and decided that it was a gorgeous place and I had to live there. So after I graduated from college, I moved there without knowing anyone. And I was a preschool teacher right out of college. I have a degree in psychology. And I was a preschool teacher, loved it, but couldn't make enough money to survive in San Francisco. That was during the dot-com boom, and I think I was making $10 an hour and just really struggling. So I knew I had to do something else that I could make more money. And one of the little boys in my preschool class, his mom worked for a wine distributor, and I happened to be talking to her on the playground one day, and she told me what she did, and it was like light came down from the sky and the bells and whistles went off in my head, and I said, oh my gosh, you know, I know nothing about wine, but I think it is so glamorous and tasty, and that just sounds like an amazing job. She got to travel the world learning about wine and talking about it, and so I decided right then and there that that's what I was going to do. And I called every wine distributor in San Francisco. Most of them, you know, hung up on me or didn't call me back. But one person did, who's still my mentor in the wine business, and he happened to be the vice president at a wine distributor, a fine wine distributor, who represented over 1,500 brands from all over the world. And they hired me on there. It was something they had never done before. They hired me on as what they called an intern. And I basically picked up all of the accounts that nobody else wanted. I think I had 400 accounts in San Francisco, and half of them were Chinese restaurants who didn't buy any wine. But it was a great learning experience. It was really important to what would eventually become the book, because I worked my way up. I worked really hard. Having those not so great accounts gave me enough time to learn, and my job was 100% commission. So if I didn't know what I was talking about, I didn't sell any wine. So I studied like mad, and I tasted all the time. And I think that part of the pain that was involved for me during those two or three years when I was really the big bulk of my learning curve, I was made fun of by people that I was selling to, by people that I was selling with, by my competitors. It was a tough time, but it was so important because I started to formulate this idea that I felt really frustrated that nobody was giving me a warm welcome into wine. I was met with such snobbery, and I made up my mind that when I did know something about wine, because I was going to, when I did know something about wine, I was going to be a defender of people that were just getting into it, and I was going to look for ways to communicate about wine that would be easier for people to digest.
Well, thank you for that. What barriers do you see between people and wine appreciation?
Well, I think we don't grow up with wine in this country. I mean, some people do, but not like in Europe, where it's just a part of the table and it's expected and it's there all the time. I mean, in Italy and France, they give little bits of wine watered down to the children, and it's a part of the culture. And I don't know that we'll ever get to that point here, but I certainly think that this book, and there are other great teachers out there about wine, but they're, I definitely think making people feel at ease with wine is the first step, and understanding, yes, there is a lot to know, but you know what? You're passionate about it, so you have just as much right to drink it and talk about it as anybody who claims they're an expert.
Yeah. Well, give us a little wine 101. What are the basics about, I'm a complete novice. I'm walking into the store, for example. I want to buy a bottle of wine. What do I need to know?
Well, I think that when you're first, I give a lot of tips about when you're just getting into wine or you're just getting into learning about wine, things that you can do to shop better, because I think that's what everybody wants, right? Is to go in and be able to communicate and then buy what they like. And so learning to talk about what you like is key. I think that if you can, even to your local store, if you can say, I liked this bottle or I didn't like this bottle, even if you can't really say why or what you liked or didn't like, lining up the bottles and saying, didn't like that, but liked that, is really going to help the experts understand what you like. Finding a small retail shop, a local wine shop who specializes in wine is really key to learning too, because they can get to know your palate and really help you kind of hone in on what are the things you like and don't like.
All right. Well, I did actually find a wine that I do like. It's made by a local winery, the Wollersheim Winery in South Central Wisconsin. And it's an award-winning wine. It gets all sorts of awards. The winery itself gets all sorts of awards. I like it. It's called Prairie Fumé. And so I like that. So why, maybe that's all I need to know.
No, I think once you know what you like, then that opens a lot of doors, because then you can say, I've got, so for instance, one of the chapters I profile all of the most popular grape varieties, so Sauvignon Blanc and Pinot Noir and Syrah and Cabernet and Merlot, and I say, okay, if you know that you like Merlot, for instance, here are a list, a handful of other grape varietals that you're probably also going to like, because they share a lot of common characteristics. And Joy, if you've read the book, you can see that I kind of give a little personality to all of the wines. They have kind of little nicknames here. Pinot Noir is the seductress. Sauvignon Blanc is the acid queen. But they really do have personalities. No matter where they where they're grown in the world, they always sort of seem to have these characteristics that shine through.
I wonder if you did notice that article that was in Slate just recently. Wisconsin was featured in this Slate article naming four unexpected wine regions. Do you have any idea why Wisconsin is good for wine?
I don't, but you're making me very curious. So I'm going to have to go on it. I live in Chicago. I'm going to have to go on a road trip and do some research.
Yeah, well, interesting. I think it was the the guy who started the Wollersheim Winery way back when actually went out to California and is one of the founders of the California, Napa Valley wine country. So I guess he saw some similarities.
Yeah, there are grapevines grown for wine in all of the continental states, not Alaska, obviously, but everywhere else. And so, yeah, there's a lot of interesting burgeoning wine regions for sure.
So why do you think people should know more about wine?
So they can drink more. So they experience the pleasure of wine, which is more than just drinking. I think one of the reasons why I fell in love with wine in the beginning is because I was right out of school, I couldn't afford to travel to all of these interesting places where wine is grown, but I could connect with that place through a great bottle of wine. I mean, I could afford a $15 Riesling from Germany when I couldn't afford a trip to Germany, and opening that bottle and using all of my senses to absorb that wine inspired me to, open a book and look at a map of German wine regions and learn more about the history of the place and the producer and what kind of thought went into making this bottle. And it's a way to connect.
Do you have a favorite wine?
Oh, I have lots of favorites.
So it depends on what the occasion is.
Yes, I mean I love to eat, so it's definitely dependent on food. My husband said I can't think about food without thinking about wine, and that's true. And that's actually a really cool part of the book too. Is I have two chapters in the back that help you decide what foods to pair with which wines and which wines to pair with which foods. So you can work it forwards or backwards from the food or the wine.
Mm-hmm.
But my favorite wines, I would say, I mean, I am always looking for an excuse to open a bottle of wine with bubbles. So
mm-hmm.
I love champagne and sparkling wines from around the world. When I can't afford champagne, I like to drink Cava or Prosecco, other sparkling wines. I love Pinot Noir is probably my favorite red grape because it's so versatile with food. And I love that, like, smooth, sensual texture of Pinot Noir and the aromas. And then I also really like white wines that are kind of tart, that have the citrusy, lemony, high in acid, tangy flavors. Because again, those are like squeezing lemon on a food. So,
what will you crack open for the Thanksgiving meal?
Probably Pinot Noir, probably New World Pinot Noir. I honestly haven't been shopping for Thanksgiving yet, but I would say probably like a Sonoma Coast Appalachian Pinot Noir.
Yeah, you haven't shopped for Thanksgiving, so meaning, I guess I'm thinking if you're having turkey stuffing and the typical stuff, you always hear, white with fish, red with meat. What do you have with turkey?
I think red. I think more people, it's nice to have a bottle of white on hand, and I would have kind of a lush wine. Basically, you want to have, whether it's white or red, you want to have wines that are kind of intense because they have to stand up to a lot of different flavors at the Thanksgiving table. And I know Thanksgiving is one of those occasions where everybody kind of brings something, so you don't always know exactly what is, going to be on the table. And then there's a lot of sweet. They're sweet and savory, so mm-hmm. you just need a wine. You need wines that are kind of flavorful and also versatile with food. So I think Pinot Noir is nice and juicy. Also, Grenache is another grape that has a juiciness and goes with a lot of different types of food, and almost has a sweet, ripe fruit flavor of cherries and berries. So Grenache is a good pick. And then luscious and flavorful white wines. So I would say, Chardonnay is always a good bet, especially New World Chardonnay. And then Vouvray is a good, that's Chenin Blanc from France, is a good choice. Sometimes those wines have just a kiss of sugar, which makes it more adaptable to all the intense flavors on the Thanksgiving table.
We are talking about wine. Consider this a wine 101. If you have any wine-related questions or pairings or shopping for a wine, for a gift perhaps, for your next nice meal. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And if you know a thing or two about wine, we'll welcome your recommendations too. Do you have a favorite kind of wine? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about wine. We are talking with the author of Hello Wine, The Most Essential Things You Need to Know About Wine. And we're welcoming your questions and your wine recommendations at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, or you can tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So is wine a regular part of your week? Is it your adult beverage of choice? Do you have it with every meal or not? Let us know. And we welcome your questions, too, for Melanie Wagner, who is the author of Hello Wine. So, Melanie, what about red wine? I'm assuming that consumption actually has probably gone up since the health benefits of red wine came out. And I think it's all wines, but it was red wine at first, that it's really good for our heart to have a glass with dinner.
Yes, it is. I'm not a doctor, so I don't make a lot of health claims, but yes, there is more and more research out there that says that red wine is good for us. And as we know, places in the world who have wine as a regular part of their diet a lot of times live longer and are healthier. So yes, people should be drinking more wine. That's my passion, and that's what I'm hoping to accomplish ultimately with the book, is to get people drinking more wine.
You know, I went to a tasting. It was wine and chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that I love them both. So,
me too.
But it was interesting that it was actually pairing different wines with different chocolate. Mm-hmm. What's the attraction there?
Sure. I actually just wrote an article for Red Book magazine that'll be out in February about wine and chocolate pairing. Definitely, me too. I'm a huge chocolate person. I don't think a week goes by that I don't have some kind of yummy, decadent chocolate, and I definitely drink lots of wine. So I think that wine and chocolate, you know, you hear a lot about the pairing. It's not a completely natural pairing, though, just because whenever you have anything sweet, any type of dessert with wine that is not at least as sweet as the dessert, you run the risk of the wine tasting a little thin and tart.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like rules. I'm a big proponent of you should do whatever tastes good to you. But in this case, with wine and chocolate, my only kind of guidance for people, which I go through in the book, is that you should try to get the chocolate as dark as you can stand, so as much of a cocoa count as possible. I think like the 60 to 65% cacao is great. And then make the wine as ripe as possible too. So Zinfandels are really ripe. Zinfandels are great. And you can check a wine's ripeness usually by checking the alcohol. Alcohol is related to ripeness. So the higher the alcohol on the bottle, the more ripe the wine will typically taste.
And what does that mean? Is the fruit was really ripe? What does
that
mean?
Yeah, the fruit was really ripe. So you get more kind of a, it's not necessarily sugar in the wine, but it's perceived as a sweetness, a sweet ripe taste in the fruit.
So the higher the alcohol, the riper the wine?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yep.
So let's say I want to have a glass of port wine after dinner, which is infused with brandy. Is that right?
Yes. It's a fermented again with brandy. It actually stops the fermentation early, so you get higher alcohol in the wine and you get more sugar left over in the wine as well, because all the sugar wasn't eaten by the yeast. So ports are great with chocolate. Either there's two main types of port, tawny and ruby. Ruby is a red color. Tawny is a tawny color.
Mm-hmm.
Rubies have more of the flavors of cherries and chocolate, and the tawny ports have more flavors of butterscotch and toffee and burnt caramel and nuts. Both are delicious, and both are really great pairings with chocolate.
Oh, yum. Yeah, I did. I have had both. I prefer the red, just my own taste, from the two that I've had. Well, so just any dark chocolate would go good with that port, red port?
Yeah, and you know what? For this, I had to do a lot of research for the Red Book article, and my favorite combination was a tawny port. It was Wars, W-A-R-R-E-S, Wars Otima tawny port. It's a 10-year-old tawny port that you serve a little bit chilled. Delicious. And I paired that with a dark chocolate covered peanut butter cup from Justin's Organic Chocolate Company. Oh my gosh. So delicious.
Well, we have a number of callers, and we have Pam from Richland Center who wants to know if you could please talk about Moscato. Is this a new wine? What do you think of it?
Sure. Lots of people are talking about Moscato. It's not new in any way, but it's sort of new to this country as far as its popularity. So Moscato can be made into a still wine or a sparkling wine. You may have seen Moscato d'Asti or Moscato d'Alba from Italy. But usually Moscato has very floral, fragrant aromas, kind of like white flowers and peaches and melon. It's fruity tasting, and it's usually got just a kiss of sugar going on too, which is why it's a lot easier to drink for people who maybe are not used to drinking a lot of wine. It goes down very easily.
It seems to be, is that sort of the new craze anyway?
You know, I think it's gaining popularity among people who are not who have not drank a lot of wine before, just because it's so easy to drink.
Yeah. Ken in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Ken.
Hello. I'm glad to hear the topic today because it's something I experienced ever since I was in third grade.
Whoa, okay.
I was in my grandmother's, she had a bar and restaurant in the south side of Sheboygan. And she always had Thanksgiving dinners or Christmas dinners upstairs in her apartment, and we would all gather there. Now, we kids were at a separate table in the kitchen sometimes, but the adults were in the dining room. But they served wine, red table wine, and we got to have a little taste of it.
That's great.
This is called Mulligan David.
Oh, I remember that.
Remember that. Well, that's the wine that we had, and we got a little sip of it as kids. We weren't pushed, but they also sold, she had a bar in that in her business, and she would have beer at the table at one time, but I thought wine was much better. It was much more sweet and nice, so that I got an idea for wine there. But the next time I actually had wine, after we moved to Milwaukee, our family moved to Milwaukee after the war, and we went to Holy Ghost Lutheran Church up on 6th and Concordia, and there, when I was confirmed, we had to have communion for the first time after confirmation, and we went up and had, and they served wine, and, you know, body and blood, the wine, and there I thought, whoa, that is something, it's like hit me. And later on, I asked the pastor, months later, I said, what kind of wine do you use in communion? He said, we use port wine.
Yeah. So do you drink wine now, though? Are you a wine fan right now?
I like port wine very much. I don't necessarily need it with cheese. I just like port wine with what I eat. But many places don't serve port wine these days. And I had to learn to have a substitute. So somehow Merlot, I thought that seems like it might be it. Merlot became the wine of my choice. And whenever I take wine, but I still would like the port occasion. But port is stronger. Believe me, port is strong. And but Merlot is a little...
Yeah, Dan, I think it was Dan. I'm sorry. We lost... So thanks very much for that. So anyway... he is a fan of some wines, and he started fairly early. But that's, I mean, it wasn't anything wrong with that, is getting a sip of wine at grandma's table.
Nope. And I think you know, his experience is probably like a lot of Americans, where, you know, we maybe have tasted wine, some kind of wine at communion or at special holiday occasions, you know, a few times a year. So, but in Europe and other places around the world, people consider wine a very important part of the table on a daily basis.
My mother used to drink only on, like, I think it was like a Christmas, like a holiday. And it was a glass of Mogan David, only on certain special occasions. Is Mogan David still around?
I think they are, but they're not in the book.
No, they're not. Because that is, I mean, that's just, it was just a sweeter, cheaper wine is,
right.
what it was, yeah.
Yeah. And you don't have to spend a lot of money to find really good wines. I talk a lot about great values, and value wines are simply wines that over-deliver for the price. They taste like they're more expensive than they are. And I think that's one of the great things about wine is, you know, it doesn't have to be expensive. When I find wines that are, you know, $8, $10 a bottle, sometimes those are the wines I get the most excited about, because I can drink them and not feel guilty about opening a bottle on a Wednesday night.
Yeah, so what's the best buy?
Oh, there's lots. I just wrote a blog that's going to go out this week that has it's the essential holiday case. So if you're going to buy 12 bottles of wine, these are some really great values. One great little value that I put in there was a wine called Wolf Trap. The winery's name is Buchenhutzkluf, which is really hard to remember and spell. But just if you remember Wolf Trap, it's a little wine from South Africa. It is about, I think it's $8 a bottle. They sell it at Whole Foods here and also at some of the other wine shops. But it's pretty easy to find. And it is a Syrah. It's Syrah and Mourvedre, two grape varietals, mix. And it is tasty. It is, it's kind of a big wine with a meaty edge. A lot of wines from South Africa have this meaty, gamey, bacony kind of quality to them. So really good for food pairing with intense foods that you would have at the holidays.
We are talking about all things related to wine, and we're welcoming your questions. We're welcoming your recommendations. Do you have a favorite wine? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our next caller is Jim in Ashland. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Go ahead, Jim.
Okay. I wanted to put a plug in for wines from Uruguay. The grape that seems to thrive there, like Malbec in Argentina, is called Tannat, T-A-N-N-A-T.
Yes.
I'm wondering if your guest has any experience with that, and I'd also like to share a little anecdote about Uruguayan wine.
Okay. No, I have not had Uruguayan wine, but I have heard a lot about what's going on down there, and I've definitely had Tannat, which is a hugely tannic wine. If your listeners don't know about tannin, that is the dry, bitter sensation you get in wine.
Mm-hmm.
And Tannat has thick skins, and tannin comes from the skins of grapes. So the Tannat grape makes wines that have really dark color and extremely bitter, staunch flavor to them, but really cool wines. Cool, powerful, age-worthy wines.
Well, our experience with it is it's not that bitter, and usually the best Tannat is aged in oak, and the Tannat Roble. When we visit my wife's family in Uruguay, whenever we come back, I usually walk across the road where there's a big winery and bring a few bottles back with me. But that's not what we drink when we're there. When we're there, we drink the really cheap, ordinary stuff that the regular people in Uruguay drink all the time, and it comes in a in a form that's called vino suelto, which literally means loose wine. But you buy it in bulk, and you take your container to the corner store and fill it up, and there's usually a couple different choices. And it's very low alcohol and really, really cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And
can you imagine?
They get with practically every meal, and it's a nice little cultural thing that one can enjoy there too.
Do you think we'll ever get to that point here?
Somehow I doubt it. But we do think about all of the bottles that are not reusable, and the all of the glass. While you can recycle the containers, they're not really reused around here.
Mm-hmm.
And,
that's a funny contradiction about the U.S. too. You know, we talked about how we were talking earlier about how we kind of view wine as this elusive, sophisticated kind of special occasion beverage sometimes here more than in other countries. But we also spend more on wine than other people do. You know, we don't see it as the everyday beverage that they do in places like Uruguay, like you're describing.
Thank you, Jim, for the call. We are talking with Melanie Wagner. She is the author of Hello Wine, The Most Essential Things You Need to Know About Wine. We're welcoming your questions about wine. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Give me a great big glass of wine. Give me a great big glass of wine.
We are talking about wine with Melanie Wagner. She is a certified sommelier, as well as a wine writer, teacher, and speaker, and she is the author of Hello Wine. And we're welcoming your favorite wines, your recommendations for wines, your questions about wines. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So is there a proper way to order wine at a restaurant, Melanie?
There's no proper way to order, but there's definitely some protocol that happens once you order a bottle. Usually the waiter, server comes over and shows you the bottle. And what you're doing there when you're looking at the label is making sure that it's the correct wine that you ordered and that it's the correct year, if you care about the vintage. And then he or she will open it for you. They pour a little bit in your glass. You don't need to smell or touch or examine the cork in any way. That's kind of a misnomer. People think that the cork will tell you something about the wine, and it really doesn't. I've popped a black and green and moldy, disgusting looking cork on perfect wine before, and vice versa. I've had a perfect looking cork come out of wine that is flawed. So the cork won't really tell you anything about wine. You can just set it on the table and leave it there. But getting your nose in the glass and smelling that first little sip of wine should tell you something about the glass. Should tell you something about the wine. You want to make sure that it smells like fruit and not like something else.
Like dirty socks?
Yeah. Yeah. I have a list of some of the most popular wine faults and what they smell like and what to do about it. But the thing that happens more than anything else is that a wine is corked. That's what it's. That's the nickname for this fault. That is trichloranisole or TCA. It's a chemical compound that gets in the wine, and it makes the wine smell like musty, wet cardboard. So that's one of the main things that you're looking for, is that the wine does not smell like musty, wet cardboard. When I'm teaching and I get a wine that is corked that has this smell, I pass around the glass because I want to make sure everybody memorizes that smell. And I guarantee all of your listeners, if they drink wine on a regular basis, have had a corked wine from one time to another, because they say one in every 12 bottles is corked.
Mm. So if you get that cardboard smell, you would say to the server, "I don't want this."
You would say to the waiter, "No, it's not. You don't like it." You would just say, "Nope, this is flawed," or "No, this is corked," or "It doesn't smell right." So they should never give you a problem about it. If they do, they don't know what they're doing with wine, because the winery pays the restaurant and the retail store back if they get wines back that are flawed. So don't feel bad at all about sending the wine back and getting another bottle.
What if it's not necessarily flawed, but it's not what you expected?
That's you could send it back, but that's not really a good reason to send it back.
Mm-hmm.
But most, if you said that to most fine restaurants, they would be happy to replace it with another bottle.
Yeah. And there's so many choices on a wine list. How do you recommend you narrow it down?
I have recommendations for that in the book. I think that there are some grape varieties that are just more food friendly than others. One of those is Pinot Noir. I know you're going to think I have a love affair with Pinot Noir because I've talked about it
a couple of times,
but it is really a great grape for food pairing because it doesn't have a lot of that tannin we were talking about earlier that Tannat has. Pinot Noir has very thin skins, and so you get a very silky texture in a red wine. So it's a red wine that actually could go with something as light as fish. And it's just really versatile. So Pinot Noir is a good choice if you've got people at the table who are all ordering, you know, different things. Champagne and sparkling wine is also very versatile. And then crisp whites are good with food, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to try a Pinot next time, that's for sure. Kathy in Ashland is with us. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, it's Kathy. Actually, I love Pinot Noir, and I serve, so I... Ashland's known for fish, and so I suggest Pinot Noir a lot. But my question is, what about boxed wine? My favorite boxed wine is Black Box, and you get a lot of wine for the price, and yeah. I just want to hear the opinion for that.
Sure. I recently wrote a blog post at MelanieWagnerWine.com on boxed wines because I'm a huge proponent of anything that keeps wine healthy and tasting good for longer, because that means it's going to make you happier for a longer period of time. And, so the box is a great way to encapsulate wine and keep it fresh. Basically, you're keeping oxygen away from the wine, which makes it taste good for longer, like I said, for about a month, they say, 4 to 6 weeks. And it's perfect. It's a great way to encapsulate wine. I think that we are going to see more and more high-quality wine being put in boxes. Obviously, there's a stigma surrounding it. People think that, you know, only cheap wine goes into boxes, but I think we're going to see more and more high-end wines going in there, especially for a restaurant. It makes a lot of sense for restaurants to have fine wines in boxes, because if they're trying to do, you know, a high-end wine by the glass, it's silly for them to open a bottle and then, you know, waste the extra wine that somebody didn't order. So... yay, boxes.
Yeah. Thanks, Kathy. Lynn in Racine is with us. Hello, Lynn.
Good morning, ladies. I just wanted to recommend a red wine that I like. I'm usually a white wine person, and someone introduced me to Untouchable Red by Simon Creek Winery in Door County, and I really like it. It's become one of my favorite wines. I always have a bottle, you know, on the shelf or in the house, and it's a little dry, but not real dry, and it just seems to go with a lot of different things, and we've become very fond of it. So,
yeah.
Simon Creek's Untouchable Red.
That sounds good. Thank you very much, Lynn. I have not tried that, though. I'm familiar with the Simon Creek Winery. I'm guessing, Melanie, you may not be familiar with
it. No, I'm going to have to get a bottle.
Yeah. And there's also Big Red from the Botham Winery near Madison. That is another good one. But what's the difference? Why are some reds refrigerated and cold and others not?
It just depends on your personal preference. You know, we have this saying that we pass around that wine, red wine should be at room temperature. That's what you should serve red wine at. But that sort of dates back to a long, long time ago in England when things were drafty. We didn't have central air, and we actually live a lot warmer now than we used to. So that's a misnomer as well. I think that serving all red wines with just a little bit of a chill on them actually makes them taste better. And mm-hmm. and I often at home, if I happen to not, I keep my wine in my basement where it's nice and cool all the time. But if I happen to bring a bottle in from the store or from somewhere else and it's sitting on my kitchen counter for a while, I usually pop it in the refrigerator for maybe 15 minutes or so before I drink it, because the cooler a wine is, the less you're going to notice the alcohol and the more you're going to taste other things in the wine.
I didn't know that. And I do prefer it colder anyway, so I'm going to try that too. Thank you. You know, we talked earlier about this article that mentioned that Wisconsin was a unexpected wine region. And one of the things in that article was, well, you know, wine and cheese, we're the America's Dairyland after all, and we make a lot of cheese, so it's only natural. Well, how did mm-hmm. wine and cheese become such a famous pairing?
That's a really good question. I mean, the same places that my guess is the same places that have been making wine for a really long time have also been making cheese for a long time. So it's a natural fit.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're talking about wine and cheese pairing, I have a great section in the back of the book that is all about pairing wines and cheese, and I have all the most popular cheeses from all over the world listed and which wines go well with them. But if you look to the region, a specific region, for instance, the Loire Valley in France makes beautiful, crisp Sauvignon Blanc-based wines like Sancerre, and they also make incredible fresh goat cheese. So those two things just happen to go beautifully together. So looking to regions, that makes sense. I mean, Wisconsin cheese and Wisconsin wine,
mm-hmm.
French cheese, French wine.
There we go.
Those are some of the most natural pairings.
Ron in Whitefish Bay is with us. Hello, Ron.
Hi. I would like to know what the guest thinks of more and more wineries are coming out with the twist top rather than the cork.
Yes.
I'd like to know what her take on that is.
Yeah, good question.
Yes. I'm a big fan of screw caps also. And sometimes you hear them being called Stelvin closures. A little earlier in the program, we were talking about the different faults that can happen to a bottle of wine. And the number one was TCA contamination, which people call a wine being corked. Doesn't mean it's enclosed with a cork. A wine being corked means that it has this TCA infection. And it makes your wine smell like musty, wet cardboard. And they say it happens to one in every 12 bottles of wine. So the 100% fix the problem solution is to switch all wines into having screw caps. But the reason why people don't do that, the reason why everybody doesn't switch right now, is because of the perceived notion that cheap wines come with screw caps. So the more we buy screw caps, the more we're going to give confidence to the industry that it doesn't matter if a wine has a cork or a screw cap. We just want the most fresh, best possible enclosure for the wine.
Yeah, and
so I'm a big fan.
Should we still buy corkscrews?
We don't need a corkscrew if you have.
No, I mean, you offer tips on what kind of corkscrew you should buy.
Yes. So there are unfortunately still plenty of wines that have a cork as the enclosure. So yes, you're going to need a corkscrew for a while, unless you just commit yourself to buying totally screw cap wines, which you could. I mean, New Zealand hasn't had a wine with a cork in it for 10 years, probably. They were the inventor of the screw cap closure, and pretty much everything that comes from New Zealand now has a screw cap.
Yeah. How do we take care of wine at home once, you know, how do we store it before we open it? And once we open it, how long will it last?
Sure. Those are important questions, and I have a lot of information about in the book about practically gracefully inserting wine into your life and all the practical tips that go around that. So great questions. I think when you get your wine home, the best place to have it needs to be a place that is relatively cool. and away from light, because light ages wine faster and heat speeds up the aging process of wine, but not in a good way. So you, if you have a basement that is kind of unfinished and cool, that's a perfect place. If you've got a wine cellar, that's even better. If you've got a wine refrigerator, set it to 55 degrees. That is what has been determined as the optimal temperature for aging wine over the long term. If you don't have any of those things, you're still okay. You can still hang on to wine for a while. My advice is to put that wine in the bottom of an interior closet. It's not really fancy looking, but it'll keep your wine in the best shape until you're ready to drink it. And then once you open a bottle, you know, this is something that's really personal preference too. Before I was in the wine industry, I'm sure that I left a bottle of wine open on my kitchen counter for a week or so at a time and went back to it and didn't really think much of it. When I was selling fine wine for a living, I never showed a wine on the second day because I thought it had deteriorated quite a bit from the first day to the second day. The fruit kind of fades and the acid gets a lot lower, and you just, the wine gets a little more flabby. But if you there are tips to prolong the life of a wine once you open it. If you don't drink the whole bottle, you can put whites and reds in the refrigerator. That's probably the best tip, because just like heat speeds up the aging process, a cold environment will slow it down. So pop both reds and whites in the fridge to prolong it, the life.
Let me get in another question or two. Buzz on Facebook asks, any recommendations for wine finding apps for smartphones?
I'm working on one.
Are you really?
Yes.
All right.
So stay tuned.
All right. We have Julie on Facebook who says, I generally like white wines, but I'm told that is because I'm a rookie when it comes to wine. Why is that?
That's not true. Don't tell tell her that she can say back that it's completely not true. One of the main things that I emphasize in Hello Wine is that you got to go with what you like, and don't let anybody tell you that what you like is not the right thing, because it's just like food or the place you live or the person that you decide to marry. Wine is, people have different preferences in wines, and even the experts who rate wines for a living, or, you know, wine critics, they cannot help but be swayed by their own flavor profile of things that they prefer and like.
Let's go to Lucas in Seymour. Hi, Lucas.
Hello. I was wondering what your thoughts are on wine on tap in Wisconsin bars.
That's awesome.
Yes. No, definitely. That's one of the ways that we talked earlier about the possibility that higher-end wines are going to be going into boxes for restaurants, and I think wines on tap is the same situation. If you can create any kind of environment which keeps a wine fresher, including kegs, for restaurants to be able to serve wine by the glass in a way that is less expensive for them, is better for all the people that are in the restaurant drinking it, because it means that it's going to cost them less and they're going to have access to better quality wines.
Well, we have less than a minute to go. Melanie, I learned a lot. What is the takeaway from your book? What do you hope is accomplished?
I hope people feel smart and empowered and excited about wine after reading Hello Wine. I hope that this is the first book that they pick up about wine, but that it inspires them to keep learning for their whole life.
Thank you very much for being with us. Melanie Wagner is the author of Hello Wine, The Most Essential Things You Need to Know About Wine. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Marika Saval for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. Tomorrow at this time, we're going to be talking about foods, indigenous foods, foods that are native to this land. And we'll get hungry talking about that tomorrow at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Got to have it. Wow.